Thank you for tuning in to the Ultimate Coach Podcast, a companion to the transformative book, The Ultimate Coach, written by Amy Hardison and Alan D. Thompson. Each conversation is designed to be a powerful wake-up call, reminding us of what's possible for you and your life. So if you're on a journey to expand your state of being, this podcast is for you.
Welcome to the Ultimate Coach Podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing April Dodd, an internationally renowned transformational coach, best-selling author, speaker, and alchemist of beautiful living. With over 25 years of experience, April has empowered women worldwide to awaken their dreams with pleasure, power, and femininity. April's exceptional background in spiritual psychology, coupled with her three best-selling books and speaking engagements, makes her a beacon of wisdom and inspiration. As a transformational life design coach, April mentors women to bridge the gap between dreaming and designing a life they love. With her unique blend of spirituality and pragmatism, April invites her clients to embody the evidence of spirit-finding celebration through them. Welcome, April, to our show. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you. It's so beautiful to be here and to be here with you. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Oh, thank you for accepting my invitation. So, April, looking at your background and your work, I can see clearly that you have a mission to empower women to live life more intentionally, with more purpose, joy, and fulfillment. And it seems that your journey has taken you through various phases, from teaching music to developing a personal development program for kids, and then focusing on parents and adults. Will you tell us about who you are and how did this transformation unfold for you?
Boy, that's a long story. So I think it's a story for all of us because we all go through these journeys of trials, and we go through these journeys of really doubting ourselves or being directed or directing ourselves in a certain direction that really challenges us and brings forth the opportunities to really rise above. And so in short, my journey into being a teacher really came when I was 3 years old. And it was my third birthday. And I was just so excited about all the joy that was in my house. I'm the youngest of six. And everybody was having the celebration in my house. And I came outside with my new toy to show my friends, which were the tree, the sky, and whatever that presence I knew was there every time I went outside or everywhere I went. I didn't know what to call it. It was unquestionable. It was there. And in that moment, I remember saying how great life is. And then looking back at my house and thinking, why doesn't everybody get that? There was just, you know, dysfunction and trauma and stress in the house. And I could feel that, being highly sensitive. And in that moment of asking, I really got or was told or downloaded or whatever it was in that really divine moment that I was here to help show people how great life was. Now, I know that can sound arrogant, but it was my hearing. It was what I felt from the inside out. And it took me on a journey of the different iterations of what that meant. And so as I grew and got into school, everything that I would study was around how to make life great. And one of the ways that I found that was through learning communication. I was really obsessed with people. And I was really fascinated and excited that music could bring out the best in people. And so on my way to school, I would walk with a girl who was older than me. She was in second grade, I was in first, and I would sing on my way to school. And I would talk to strangers because I've been fascinated with people ever since. And one day she stopped me and squared me up and looked me straight in my eyes and told me I was ugly, had a rotten voice, and a rotten smile. And I believed her. It's the things that, you know, we are impressionable about when we were young. And so having older brothers to, you know, nail that belief in further, I took that belief with me for a very, very long time. And so I began hiding and I hid my smile. I stopped smiling. All my school pictures, you could never see my teeth. I hid my beauty because I was afraid that people wouldn't be my friend. And I've just always just wanted to make friends. And I got into music, but I hid my voice. Instead, I became really, really good at playing the flute. And everywhere I would go, I would become first chair flute. And so I'd be right on the edge of the stage, but I'd still be hiding behind a music stand, right? And so, you know, snapshot years later, I studied music and I became a music teacher and I taught for 9 years. But what kept coming forward was showing the kids and the parents how great life could be. And I did that through music. So I would often go into schools that were having trouble with their music program and I'd be the one to come in and turn it around. And it would bring all sorts of things up for students because I'd put them up on stage and have them really examine who they're being on stage and off stage so they could really look at that in a way that they weren't ever being taught before. And parents would come up and their stuff would come up too. Like, oh my gosh, my child can't do that. And I'd say, are you sure? Who can't do that? And we would have conversations even about their own upbringing, right? It would be these almost therapeutic sessions for the parents on who they're being with their kids. And are they projecting onto their kids and limiting their possibilities? And so it was a really fascinating tour of how to be through music. And I would get on the music or I would get on the desk and I'd put clown noses on, like do anything to bring forward the joy in kids, but also to have them look at themselves. And then I walked into my classroom one day, that first day for school teachers, and, you know, where the books are put away and the desks are against the wall and such. And I didn't really have desks. It was a music classroom, but I had all my things pushed against a wall and I walked in. And as soon as I crossed that threshold, I literally almost threw up. Like it overcame me. And I knew somehow I was done teaching. Like this great grand knowing moment came over me. Unshakable, very, very uncomfortable. I knew I was done teaching. And I thought, how could I be? I love kids. I love music. I love teaching. And this is the time period that I went through that I think we all go through in these times of true and deep listening, courageous listening, because it puts in our face all the things we thought we were, everything that we've committed to, the escalation of commitment that has created an identification that I was being squared up with this time. No longer the second grade girl, but the girl that I had built myself to be and now was stepping into something else. At the same time, I was completing my master's degree in spiritual psychology with Steve Hardison. We were in the same class together. And in that second year, we had a project called Your Life Project. And it was something that you've always wanted to do, but something got in your way. Usually our fears, but maybe you got married, you joined the army, you know, you had children, something like that. And my dream was to get on stage and sing and finally give myself a voice, get out from behind the music stand. And I think there's a music stand in all of our lives that we need to get out from behind to really be seen as who we are, that we knew we were when we were young, that I knew I was when I was 3 years old. And so I set on a course I took voice lessons, I took dance lessons, I took acting classes, of which I was quite often the oldest person in there, but I didn't care because I was committed to my commitment of who I wanted to be. I wasn't committed to being the best. I wasn't committed to keeping an identity. It was, I knew who I wanted to be. And so everything that came up in that path was in service to me healing that so that I could keep going, right? So anyway, I took all those classes and my end project was to have an audition. Now, I am not in control of the audition. I am just in control of showing up. I did the work. I showed up. And I showed up, and this is really before, you know, having a cell phone all the time with me. And the girl before me sang the same song I did. And I didn't know etiquette if it was okay to sing the same song. And I didn't know what to do, so I panicked. And the piano player didn't show up, so I had to sing a cappella. So I brought this resume with me that I kind of made up. It was really, I had no experience. It was just being a music teacher. And then there was this one line at the bottom that said, I played the part of a music teacher in a little 5-minute musical that I made up for my first grade students. But it was enough for me, right? It was enough for me. And I put it on there. Anyway, I go up and I sing my songs. And the director, you know, the typical scenario, they're far away at the table, glasses on, and he's looking down at my resume and he looks up at me and he goes, have you been in a musical before? Like he's looking like he can't find it. So I come over to the table and I point at it. Well, I was kind of in that little show right there. I'm kind of pointing and he takes his glasses off and he looks at me and he goes, you mean to tell me you've been hiding that voice for this long? I just about cried on the spot. It was the most meaningful thing anyone had ever said to me. I screamed all the way down the highway. I didn't care if I got a part in the show. It was the most meaningful thing ever in my life. And so the question is, right, what have you been hiding for this long?
It so resonates with me, April. The same thing. Like, I believe that the part that people see is the tip of the iceberg for every human being.
Yeah.
There is a huge mountain under the surface.
Right, right. You're like the best kept secret and you're it's like a balloon, right? And we're squeezing, you know, when you let just a little bit out. And that's what I had been doing in service to committing to what that second grade girl had said to me. And now I was, whatever, 30-something years old, and I had been holding that for that long. I was singing in my closets, singing in the closed windows of my car, right? And I was singing to children who I knew would accept me. I was playing it safe. You mean to tell me you've been hiding that voice for this long? Changed my life. I did get a part in the show. It was a 5-woman cast. It was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. From there, I go into my classroom and I almost throw up and I know that I am done teaching because teaching was my shadow career. I was hiding behind the music stand of my career. All right. How often do we all do that?
Yeah.
So from there, I took that final school year to quietly craft what was coming for me next and what I was stepping into. And in that time, I picked up the phone and I called Steve Hardison, who I, you know, connected with at USM, but we weren't on the phone all the time together. But I heard about this coaching thing. Like nobody knew what a coach was back then. And I called him up and he says, April, I don't know why you're not already a coach. And I thought, wow, okay. So I quit teaching. I took the leap. I had no insurance, no, like all the things my dad would have said. My dad had passed when I was 25, but my dad would have said, what are you doing? This is crazy. Like all the safe players would have said, this is crazy. What are you doing? But I couldn't not do it. And that's the questions I have to ask me. What can't I not do? Like, what can't not I do every day and step into that? And so I did. I got into coaching and, you know, whatever. I first started working with kids, teaching them personal growth and development, getting them on stage and such and such. And then I was teaching them such powerful skills that it was almost dangerous because they were coming home with these skills and wanting and wishing their parents would use them. And it would sound like they were talking back to their parents or being more powerful. So I started working with grownups. And then, you know, now I work mostly with moms, exhausted, depleted, disconnected moms who also have forgotten themselves, that voice that they have. You mean to tell me you've been hiding that blank for this long? And so that's how I got into this. And that's what I do today.
Wow. Amazing, beautiful story. And it's so true. Everybody has something to offer. Everybody has a gift that they are not letting the world benefit from, right?
Right, right.
So I have a question. I know you have a lot of interest in meditation and its benefits, and it's quite inspiring. And as a meditation teacher myself and coach, it's so up on my valley. I know my why in favoring meditation, but I wonder about yours. Why do you find meditation and mindfulness as transformational practices?
I find it is necessary. And for a time being, it's a necessary illusion because we're in it to dissolve our illusions about ourselves, to let everything go, to empty. But we're going in it thinking there's something wrong with us that we need to fix. So I'll go in and I'll meditate or I'll get closer to God, right? We think these things, and it's really my practice is about emptying, letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go of letting go. And as my meditation teacher, my spiritual teacher here in Austin, I used to go every Tuesday, and he was, you know, part of the reason why I went to USM and got into my project and so on and so on. He would give the analogy of these sticks in a fire, right? You have a stick in your hand and you find these sticks around the fire and you take your stick and you're flicking another stick into the fire. Like, oh, there's one, right? There's something I'm attached to. Throw it in the fire. Throw it in the meditation fire. You're gathering sticks, right? You're putting it in the fire to dissolve it and transform it. Eventually, you come to see that you have still a stick in your hand, right? And you got to let that one go too. And the one that's holding the stick. So it's a constant letting go, right? It's a constant letting go. And I think with, you know, during the day and any given day, and especially I'll speak for us moms, we're bombarded with all of our senses, and especially if you're highly sensitive. You've got, you know, your hearing sense, your taste sense, your sight sense, like the feeling sense. All the senses are coming at you all day. The instant you wake up, they start crashing in again, right? And so it's the constant letting go. And if we don't take time to create emptiness and store the energy, then we are not building our will. And it's our will muscle that we use the most to transform. Otherwise, we're just constantly circulating what we already know or what we already think we know, the illusions of what we think we know, and they keep going. And that's the stick, right? We got to throw that stick in too. And so I think meditation is necessary. I think we paint ourselves eventually into corners where it's like you can't get out of this journey without getting quiet and emptying. You can't get out full. And so we do all the life things and all the mom things and all the dad things. Like we do all the things and then eventually get to our corner and be like, okay, I'm defeated by those things I thought would get me there. And meditation brings us home.
So well said. So well said, April. I love it, really. And I love the analogy of the stick. There's one thing I wonder if you would be comfortable sharing. During our earlier conversation, you mentioned something about going deep inside and finding the exact place where a trapped emotion is causing the discomfort for us. And you even gave an example about a young football player You think you can share that with our audience, that story?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Because that's the crux of the work that I do. You know, anything that we are triggered by or anything that we constantly are operated by is coming from that subconscious place in us, in ourselves. And most of those subconscious places are trapped memories or decisions that we made a long time ago. And our subconscious has a photographic memory. So while we're not conscious of it, it's remembering for us and reacting or acting in service to protecting us, right? As we know. So my work with people and with this 17-year-old example I'll share is to go in deep. Go into those places where we find the exact place where that subconscious emotion got trapped. That's creating this now moment's problem or block or whatever you want to call it. We go to that exact moment and we heal that moment with loving compassion, with conversation, with, you know, all sorts of ways of being that just really complete the fear cycle, complete the unfinished business. From there, there is newness, right? And an opening. And in that opening, we literally can code in the truth, reminded of the truth. And from that experience in your subconscious, it's in there. And you'll find when you come out of these sessions, you're literally coded with something new. And all of a sudden, you're not doing that thing anymore or afraid of that thing. Or you find yourself doing the thing that you were holding back on doing before. There was a woman that was afraid to go on elevators. And after, you know, one or two sessions, she found herself in an elevator and didn't even think twice about it. It was just that you return to your natural state. So the 17-year-old boy had come to me because he was a phenomenal football player. Yet he was having body aches consistently and throwing up on the football field so consistently they didn't want to put him in because they didn't want to rely on him. So he was starting to feel a disappointment from those who entrusted him, right? And that he believed in himself, but he couldn't get past this. He'd been to the chiropractor. They did as much work as they could, but they couldn't get his hips to really heal and to stop the vomiting. They did the brain scans. They did all sorts of things. So his dad calls me up and we arrange an appointment. And he and I, the son and I, had one session where we went in and we were able to find the exact place where the emotion that's connected to the vomiting, that's connected to the football, started. And from there, we were able to heal that memory, heal that moment, heal what came forward within him, and in its place, apply the loving, the compassion, the forgiveness, the new decisions, the truth about who he is that could actually take hold because he could now believe it. But on top of the old beliefs and the old experiences we have, until those are healed, no amount of, you know, saying positive things and affirmation, nothing's going to work because it's landing on top of this foundation that is unchecked. So for many of us who work on our documents, you know, there's going to be one or two or three things in our document that we're still like, it's not clicking. Or it's not happening, and we can't figure out why. And so with this boy, we were able to get to that place. We use a whole bunch of different ways to get there. It's really beautiful and gentle and loving. And after one session, he has a football game like that same week, and we got to talk after the game, and he said he threw up once and has never thrown up again. He was confident. He was strong. He was not overridden with whatever was coming forward for him before that was making him vomit, that was attached to an emotional experience he had so long ago that when we're little, we don't go, hey, I'm going to remember this and therefore I'm never going to, you know, whatever it is. He just was able to absorb the newness of it all from a place of acceptance and loving compassion and forgiveness and all the things. So now he could show up and play the damn game. He was so stoked to play that people were counting on him to play. And I remember his text to me was, "This is so freaky," you know, teenage boy text. "This is so freaky. I can't believe this happened after only one session." I was like, that's how this works. When you tell the truth to a place that wants to hear the truth, that's starving for the truth, then what can come forward is all but natural. That's it.
But April, when I like listen to this story, it's giving me goosebumps. But isn't that very similar to what you experienced as a 6-year-old little girl? And
as a 3-year-old little girl? Uh-huh. Oh, or that when I was walking with the...
Yes, 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 with older girl. I mean, that was your like stuckness. And then you came out of this and he did the same thing with this sports, football. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And, you know, all those places inside are really serving us to stay safe. Mine was to stay safe from having people leave. Like, won't be my friend because I'm too pretty or I have a great smile or I'm singing or they're jealous. You know, I would hear this all my life, or because my radar was looking for it, that's what I was hearing. That's where I was being from. You're not going to like me because you think I'm pretty, or you're going to really like me and only see that I'm pretty and not see everything else. And so I would downplay that, right? And so he would get to the game. And he'd be so afraid of throwing up that it would make him more anxious and throw, like, the whole snowball effect. And until you go into the place that is creating that and not only apply the loving and the healing and the necessary things it needed, but creating the new beliefs that it are ready to take hold. Like, if you could code in, now, if you can think of coding in one belief, that if you like, I don't have that yet, but gosh, if I just had that one, like that's the one that we code in. That's the one that we work to get in there because there's a truth about it that's ready to take hold. But there's this thing in the middle that you may or may not know you've been holding on to that is keeping. So for a quick example is me making money. I was like, how come I keep hitting this upper ceiling? I've done the things, I've done the affirmation. Like, what is the story? Well, I came to find out through doing the same process on myself that there was a time when my dad, this is actually a positive story, not a negative one. Like, you know, we think we have a little trauma and that impacts us. Now, this didn't feel like a trauma. And so we can think of these things too. It was I used to ask my dad for, hey, dad, I'm going out with my friends. Can I borrow $10? And he trusted me all the time. And so he'd say, yeah, go get my wallet. I'd see only a 20. I'd say, hey, dad, you only have a 20. And he'd say, that's okay. Just bring me back the change. And he didn't care if I brought him 50 cents back or $10. And he really just trusted me. That's the scenario. Why is that a traumatic event? It's not, except I had what I call a meta experience that made some decisions. And it went like this. If I stop borrowing money from my dad will stop feeling like a good dad. Because as the youngest of 6 and my dad was an alcoholic, I had a different dad, right? And we had a different relationship because he'd already been through a lot of his drinking with the other siblings. And so with me, he could feel like a good dad, right? So if I don't borrow money from him, he's not going to feel like a good dad. If he doesn't feel like a good dad, he's going to drink. If my dad drinks, he's going to die. So short in that story is if I make more money than my dad, he's going to die. Like, you'll never find those answers out when you go to therapy, right? You gotta like, you don't talk like the connections aren't made there. It's when we can go deep like this and explore the subconscious and really get in there in such a gentle and loving way where we're not reliving the experience, but we're next to it, offering it what it needs. So then I can come back and know that I'm safe to make money. It's safe for me to make money, and it's safe for my dad for me to make money. So those may not be things you write on a document, but they are the things that are written in my subconscious and on my heart that will start to come forward in my ways of being.
So powerful. Thank you for sharing this. So there's a question that I ask to all my guests. This one is, which one of the questions in the Before You Begin section of the Ultimate Coach book or on the back of the book you see is the one you need to focus on at this moment in time in your life?
It is, who would I need to be to create a level of confidence that is remarkable? I have it here in my phone. And I have, you know, if you have a newer phone, you can have it rotate your background. Have created 5 different backgrounds that rotate like every hour. And they have all of those questions on them. So I'm asking them every single day. And my commitment to myself is that I have to answer at least one of them before I open my phone. So I am with it. I'm stalking it every day throughout the day. I'm not just unconsciously or automatically turning on my phone. I am creating a level of remarkable confidence by asking myself that question right now and doing something about it right now. It's not a, oh, I fantasize about how I would be. It's right now. It's a right now question. And if I can't answer that right now, then something else is owning me. And that's probably not who I want to be.
Oh, wow. I love this. This is an amazing idea. I will definitely implement that.
And if you don't know how to do it, ask your kids, because they're the ones that showed me how to do it.
That's for sure. Thank you so much. Okay. Now this takes us to the 3 rapid fire questions.
Okay. I'm ready.
Your hidden talent. Yes, we know that you are talented in singing and music, but is there any other skill or talent that might surprise our listeners?
I feel like I'm an open book. Well, I notice patterns really well. When I was a child, I would use my dad had his own little bathroom downstairs on the main floor, and I could sit and stare at wallpaper and notice every single nuanced pattern. I'm constantly noticing patterns, which makes me an excellent editor when I read books or hear pitches in music, newspapers. I'm always finding mistakes. Like I notice patterns really, really, really well.
Oh, that's very interesting. Thank you. And second one, your guilty pleasure. What's something you indulge in, even if you know you probably shouldn't?
This is probably a common answer, but it's chocolate. it's chocolate, and it's, I think it's Hunan. It's a brother and sister who make this chocolate that doesn't have gluten or sugar or dairy or any of that stuff. And yeah, it's my guilty pleasure. And it's brother and sister, and I'm very close to my brother, and I introduced him to the chocolate, so we kind of share that bond.
Oh, that's sweet. Sweet. And the third question, your dream collaboration. If you could collaborate with anyone in the world, living or dead, who would it be?
Oh my goodness. Dream collaboration. Wow, that's a really profound question. Huh. Gosh. I don't know if I have a who, but I have a what.
Okay.
It would be being on stage in general. One of them would be singing and performing. I do love the music of the Indigo Girls, so maybe that would be one of them. Harmonizing with the Indigo Girls. And then another one is being on stage, but leading a transformational experience for the audience. I don't know who that would be. There's so many magnificent people in this community alone, but in the world for sure. I think the bottom line is just being on stage, not for everybody else.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So while we are coming close to the end of our conversation, April, I want to ask you how our listeners can connect with you. How can they reach out to you?
Okay, yeah. So my website, aprildodd.com. You can also, if you go to my website, there's a couple of freebies that they can get. And they're fun freebies. And then you can also find me. I have a group on Facebook called Spiritual Mom Babes. And it's for, yeah, it's for spiritual mom babes. It's for us remembering who we are and living the life as a mom, but also staying connected to our spirit and who we are. And then I also have a group called the Coach's Toolkit for Changemakers, where I offer free tips and tools. And right now I'm about to launch a class called The Finesse of Coaching, using spiritual psychology in the 25 years of working with spiritual teachers.
Beautiful.
I've got to get out what's in. You know, it's the whole thing you said. You mean to tell me you've been hiding that voice for this long? What is it that you have been hiding?
Wow. Wow. A huge thanks to you, dear April, for everything you shared with us today. It was really wonderful having you. And our listeners, thanks for being with us. If you found value in our talk, consider sharing it and subscribe for more. Take care, cherish your loved ones, and join us again for the next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. If there's someone you know who could benefit from this conversation, please share this episode with them. Also, check out our website, beingmovement.com. You'll find valuable resources and links to connect to an engaging and wonderfully supportive community. Together, we can inspire and support each other on the path to a greater understanding of being. Until next time, take care and be kind to yourself.